Welcome back to Overserved, everybody. I am Ari Bendersky, and I am here with my good friend and amazing co-host,
Maggie Hennessy. Hello, Ari.
Hi, Marge. Nice to see you through the ether. And we are here taking a deep dive with the people behind Chicago's thriving culinary scene. Most weeks, we invite on guests, a chef, a sommelier, a restaurateur, a farmer, or another one of the fabulous people who plies with all the food and drink that we love to enjoy. And we bring them on to learn more about their story, who they are, why they got into this crazy food world, and what makes them tick. This week, we are super excited that we have Beverly Kim and Johnny Clark, chef owners of James Beard Award-winning Parachute and Wherewithal in Avondale. They are here with us today in the Zoom hot seat. So, Johnny and Beverly, welcome to Overserved in our newest lockdown format of Zoom. It's weird, but you know, it's fun. We get to all see each other across the internet. So we're going to start out, Maggie.
Yes.
You're probably cooking even more now than you normally do. So what do you want to talk about? What are you cooking?
The one thing I want to talk about today is hash, because I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of ambitious, aspirational cooking and baking going on social. I'm like terrible at making bread. So the only kinds of bread I've made are bagels that were way too small, and I broke my KitchenAid mixer while I was making them. I tried to make focaccia, but I was looking at the recipe and it was called for 2 tablespoons of sea salt and like only 1 of kosher. And I put 2 tablespoons, and this was my last coveted stores of bread flour, my last bit of active dry fucking yeast. And I way over salted it, and I had to put it in the compost bin. And now I think it's in there growing, and it's going to eat me when I open the lid. So I feel very...
That gives a new term to death by bread.
Oh, so I'm feeling very much like loving staple back pocket recipes, and potato hash is one. It's like very, I mean, it's pretty simple once you get it down. The key is just to parboil your potatoes first. And I like to cook everything separate, like the way I cook ratatouille, because all the vegetables cook at different times. So like a lot of times if you throw all the potatoes in with the onions and garlic, the garlic will burn by the time the potatoes are brown. So I like to do, like, I'll parboil my potatoes. I like a Yukon Gold or a red potato. And then I'll saute, you know, bell pepper, onion, garlic, paprika, whatever you like. And then I set it aside in the same pan. Then I separately, I'll cook the potatoes on their own, smash them down, let them get real brown. And then I add everything together at the end and let it come together. You can put an egg on it. You could put pulled chicken in it. You could put a piece of steak on it. You could keep it vegetarian. It's so comfy. You can eat it breakfast, lunch, dinner. And I need that because I have so many bread fails. I need like little success.
Oh, you need some wins. Speaking of putting a steak on something, I saw that our good friends John and Nicole Mannion delivered some meat to you that you were hugging on Instagram the other day.
Oh God, I got a drive-by beef hug. It was like some short ribs, all from Whittingham Meats, which is on the south side. And El Che, John Mannion's Argentine Steakhouse, is doing butcher pop-ups. So I believe it's weekly. There might be some weeks where they're off, but every week they're doing pop-ups where he's selling super high quality restaurant cuts of meat, like, you know, racks, nine racks of lamb, hanger steaks, which is what I cooked last night, ribeyes, all the stuff, just absolutely gorgeous meat. And he's really great. He's like a real simple, like loves just purest sort of cooking. So it's like high heat, salt, pepper, done.
I just want to tap in to say that this episode will probably now be called Drive By Beef Hug. never heard that one before.
I love it. Well, let's introduce more deeply introduce our guests today. We have chefs Beverly Kim and Johnny Clark. They are the wife and husband team behind two of Chicago's most acclaimed and beloved restaurants. Parachute, which melds Korean and American flavors and techniques, was awarded a 1-star rating from the Michelin Guide and continues to get their 1-star rating. And newcomer Wherewithal, a breathless tasting menu spot, which earned 3-star ratings from both the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Magazine. Kim and Clark also shared the 2019 James Beard Award for Best Chef Great Lakes. They live in Chicago's Avondale neighborhood with their three sons, Beverly, Kim, and Johnny Clark. You both are clearly underachievers. Welcome to Overserved.
Oh, God.
Welcome, you guys. So good to see you.
Yeah. Air hug. Air hug.
Yeah.
So
a big drive-by beef hug.
Drive-by beef hugs to everybody.
Yes. Yeah. So really hard next week, apparently.
Oh, yeah. So you guys have kept both restaurants going pretty much since the beginning of the dine-in ban happened. It was announced March 15th. You've kind of, so obviously dine-in restaurants had to suspend operations. So you've kind of kept going by offering these sort of pared down versions of, for carryout and delivery of your menus. Can you kind of talk us through how you distilled your restaurants into to-go being primarily dine-in restaurants, kind of what the pivot was like, maybe some of the challenges?
I think, initially we took a few days off to like gather our thoughts. I don't think I don't think anyone had a plan for what they were going to do. So nor did we. So I think at first we took like a couple days, maybe the weekend or something.
And we were closed Sunday, Monday as usual, but then we took that other Tuesday. So we're normally open Tuesday through Saturday, but then we opened on Wednesday through Sunday thinking, well, who's going to go out on a Tuesday night, and like we'll try to capitalize on the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we've never opened for Sunday ever. So this is a big pivot for us because, we're just trying to maximize the days that we think that people might be eating out. Yeah. And, our family life is already kind of out of whack as it is with like day one out of school. And, it was like, well, since he's at home homeschooling, I guess, like kind of pseudo homeschooling, I guess Sundays for now aren't the only day we can see our kids anyways, but yeah. It's just been sort of a crazy shift.
Because for you, not being open Sunday was really sort of a way to claim back some family time initially and sort of.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sunday was the only day that, of course, Saturdays were always off the table. That was always, a necessity to work. But Sundays were just that one day that, our kids were not in school and that we could have to, be together as a family and do like dinner once a week all together as a family. It's a little bit different now. That day could be any day. Sundays were always sort of like this, like we're like, even if we'd have to be on like our last leg in order to open a Sunday. And so doing so, I think meant, a lot that like we figured that Sunday would be a day that a lot of people were going to order takeout. So
yeah, I've never seen anything like this in my career, or I don't think there's any guidebook to this because we both started cooking when we were like 16, he was 15. So we lived through 9/11. I lived through, 2009 recession. And, but this was like an altogether like another beast, ever that I've never seen before. So, but every time there was that big thing that happened, you knew that like, ooh, restaurants are going to be hurting for a while. But this one was like, shit, I don't even know how to even like wrap my head around this. So I think that the one thing John and I feel like have a lot of, similarities about, we're kind of like survivors, we kind of go into the survivor mode and like, like we talk about like he would, if we were in Waterworld, we'll be on that last ship, on the raft. And it almost like felt like, I remember that night.
She said she's never even seen World.
I haven't
seen. Who has seen Waterworld?
Oh my God. I have no clue. I've never seen it.
Wasn't it a Kevin Costner movie?
That's one of my favorite dive bomb movies of all time.
Let's all watch it after this and eat some beef. Okay, good idea.
So how has the transition been? I mean, you're clearly balancing so many different things, you're running two restaurants, you know, have you seen a pretty steady flow of customers and orders on a daily basis that you are open? And then how are you balancing that with, you know, as you said, homeschooling?
Yeah.
It's up and down. You know, in many ways, this is harder than doing a regular daily service like we were before. I think this requires so much online presence and so much attention to that, because there's no other way for someone to know that you're here selling food. There's nobody walking by. There's nobody, like, hardly anybody driving by. There's no reviews happening. Nobody posting pictures on social media where they're at. They're all at home. Although we get people now, you know, posting pictures of them eating our food,
replating it their on home. Their plates.
Yeah, which is really, you know.
And do you feel like, do you tell people, like, do you want to say, wipe the side of the plate, wipe it off?
My little, you know, like, cut sponges.
Right. To, you know. No, it's kind of cute because people actually take some time and effort to, like, set their like placemats and like their wine glasses and their candles and everything. We're like, wow, that's really nice.
Yeah, it's really heartwarming in so many ways to see that, you know, people still want us in their life, you know? So
yeah,
it is very, it's just one form of comfort, I think, that we have in this, like, just mysterious world that we live in right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the first week or 2 weeks was just like I think sheer survival. Everyone which is really
across the board.
Yeah, just it was like the managers, like, there was like, okay, this is what we have to do. This is like very focused, kind of like lot, like, we got a lot of tests done in one day, which was like crazy. And we had this whole, like, Bing and Bop menu with, like, seven different kind of Bing breads, like cheeseburger Bing, and, like, it was just crazy. And then at the end of the night, we're like, this is not going to work out. This is just too, way too much prep and for what we're charging. Yeah. And when we realized how much work and, like, because the check average is so much smaller than what, like, a dine-in restaurant. And I think the first couple of days, too, we weren't even sure. We didn't even know we could sell alcohol. So that was a huge...
Yeah, it was very murky. That's true.
Yeah. And, and so, like, you know, it's like essentially you're losing that sale, like, of the higher margin, like, alcohol and stuff like that. So it was just like, okay, negative. We're very negative this week.
Wow.
And,
that's a scary feeling.
Yeah. Feeling. So I think the first 3-4 days I spent all night just trying to, like, put in, like, my loan application, or trying to, like, get information about the loan, because it wasn't up yet, about the EIDL, but there was talk about, like, this $1 trillion like thing. So, you know, it was just like trying to figure out, like, what kind of, like, backup plan we had in case, like, we were like, if this doesn't work in 2 weeks, we got to shut down, you know, and, like, cut our losses. So it was kind of scary. But I think that, you know,
there was a lot of, like, kind of letting go of things too, like with the selling alcohol, you know, of course restaurants need to charge more than, like, retail,
right?
In a retail setting. There's no cooks or dishwashers in a retail setting. You know, it's just moving,
inventory,
moving your inventory. Yeah. So at first we're like, God, we're going to sell all this inventory that we paid for, and the margins are still the same, if not worse, you know? And this stuff isn't going to move at, you know, at full service pricing. And so we have to drop everything to, like, retail pricing structure. And it's just sort of, it was all sort of like, wow, we just had to kind of cut the cord on lots of high price inventory that we had and just sell it, because it was either going to sit there or go bad, you know. So we had to recreate menus. The first, you know, couple of weeks, everybody was getting the the luxurious stuff that we had, you know, sitting in our walk.
Right.
You know, I think we found a stride and, you know.
And how did you get to that point then? Like when did you turn a corner and to figure out like what worked and like, what were those things that you found that worked really well that you could still like not only provide the quality, the level of food that you were used to putting out, but also still make some money?
Yeah. In the beginning, yeah, I think we were a little overambitious thinking that we could still provide the same,
like a variety of choices.
Yeah. Variety of choices.
Right, totally.
I think that was the first wake up call. It's like, yeah, after the first night of doing service, we were like, we cannot, this is.
Yeah. Especially with very streamlined labor force. Like,
yeah. And, so we had to streamline it. We went down to just like doing our sort of family meals to go. We figured out that doing just them in increments of two helped us like manage like many calls coming in and then missing certain calls, or, you know, cause like there's only one person fielding phone calls, orders, managing deliveries and managing the boxing of all the orders that are coming in to go. And it was just like too much. So we figured that by doing it in increments of two, like family meal for two, mm-hmm. starting there was sort of cut that number in half. So like you had to be kind of committed to doing two, like buying for two.
Yeah.
Right. Which helped a lot.
Or eating for two.
Well, and they reheat well, so it's good for leftover, to be honest. Like I suggested it to a friend.
Meal for the next day. So it definitely helped. I think that streamlined the process.
How many staff do you have now currently at both places, and compared to pre-COVID, what is that?
Oh, so together between the two restaurants, I think we had like 50, I did the math like so many times, like I'm gonna, so it was like 31 at Wherewithal, right? And then it was like almost, like, I'm sorry, 21 at Wherewithal and 31 at Parachute. So together was like 52, but that's including us because we work as well. So 52, including me and John. And then it went down to like six.
Wow. So you said one person is kind of fielding calls and packaging.
Yeah, each manager does that. And then we have our office manager who is now like fielding both places and does all the web and tech stuff. And then
fills in like when there's a rush at one restaurant.
Yeah, to help package and stuff. And then we have like a sous chef at each place.
Okay.
And then we've been slowly bringing some people on. We've actually added on
delivery driver,
a few cooks like on call. Yeah. So just like when it's busy. So it's getting better. I feel like we kind of, but like we're like the first 2 weeks were negative. The next week there was like this spike and I guess everyone was like finally like realizing they can eat out. And then so like the next week we like over prepped. And then it was slow again. And then it was like, okay, then we prepped less and then it was busy. And so we sold out. We're like, oh shoot, we could have like sold more if we had prepped more. Then the next week it was like slow again. It was just like, oh, you're just messing with my mind. It's just like,
yeah, it's such a roller coaster of emotions.
It's a roller coaster of emotions because you're on this high, you're like, oh, we just did a record, and then the next week we did $400 in sales.
Oh my
God. Wow. This place opened with $400 in sales. Like that's, and so it's just been navigating that, like the up and down of the economy. Like who knows what's going out there? Like it's like the consumers, what's going on in the news. It's like, you know, like the cycle of people like finally like not going out and using up what's in their fridge. And so it's hard to navigate that, honestly. But I think that it's been sort of a little bit more steady, like at least like, okay.
This week.
But then like, you feel a little nervous and then it takes so much energy and effort to do it. And like, we're at like sitting at 6 weeks and like last night we're like, how long are we going to be doing this?
Oh my God, I know. That's the other thing. There's no, it's not like, oh, well, if we can just get to X date, it will shift.
Right.
Back. There's no, it's just this moving, murky.
And it's further away.
And it's the whole idea also that like, when you do open back up, and we've seen this week, more restaurants have come back online or announced that they're going to be doing more pickup and delivery. But again, like, we don't know. Like, I mean, obviously around the country, places are opening up slowly and for dine-in. We're clearly not going to be doing that until at least June, if not later. And at that point, it's like, how do you do it? Like, do you have to take out half your tables? Do you have to provide like wipes for everybody? Do you take their temperature? So it's just like, there's all these things that are so unknown.
And I think,
you know, hopefully you stick with it.
But I think the other piece of that is like, for you guys being dine-in primarily before all this, like, you can't survive on 25% capacity.
Yeah. Right.
No, I mean, because you need a full staff.
Exactly.
Capacity. I mean, yeah, the numbers don't work out. And I think in reality, until we're allowed to feel capable of doing dine-in, we're not going to do
it. You just won't.
Right.
Not until it makes sense. I mean, there's no way we can do both. There's no way we can achieve like the same sort of service that we were providing before and manage to, I mean, there's iPads everywhere, you know, out on the there's, I mean, our dining room's filled with takeout containers because we don't have room for that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, I would imagine a sole takeout like operation has to have a massive closet for all these takeout.
Yeah.
So, have you thought about, like, have you guys talked about maybe keeping one as delivery and pickup and doing one as dine-in as opposed to doing both either or?
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of tossed around every scenario you can imagine. I think it's just so hard to tell. The weeks are up and down. There's no static patterns. They're just, it's sort of, this week was good, this week was bad, next week will be okay. I don't know. It's just, it's hard to tell. It's hard to make any moves because it feels like any move could be your last move.
Wow. That's a scary feeling. That's not a fun place to be sitting.
And that being said, have you applied for any loans, grants, federally, locally? And if so, what has that process been like for you guys?
We have applied. Yeah. It's,
did you apply for PPP?
We did, but that, you know, that, that whole thing is just a big mystery.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know how you can spend it. The lenders don't know how you can spend it. Nobody gives you information. Like if we were to spend that kind of loan and not know, I mean, I think it's like a 2-year sort of payback.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows to give you the proper guidance how to spend that money. And if you were to take on that kind of loan, that aggressive payback period, I mean, that alone can put you out of business.
That'll saddle you with so much more debt. So, and then you're reopening compromised because you can't, it's
digging a bigger hole to fill the last hole.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's move to positive because this amazing little thing happened. You guys, I mean, and you were working on this before, but you've published this incredible little tiny cookbook with James Beard Award-winning food writer Kevin Pang. It's called Secrets to Parachute's Bing Bread. It's 32 pages dedicated to the process behind this beautiful, famous Bing bread, which is round, savory, stuffed bread, fried, baked, brushed with bacon fat. It's basically like heaven, crispy outside, soft inside.
It's so good.
So good. So you started this project before coronavirus, though, right? Can you tell us about this?
Yeah,
I mean,
I think
it's like you guys already had 3 babies. You needed another one.
You need. I know you say, stop having children.
Actually, Kevin, his idea was like just sort of to disrupt almost the cookbook industry because like
which needs it. Hey.
Yeah, it's just like there's always like this traditional path, like every like, oh, you make a name for yourself. Now it's time to write a cookbook, and now it's time to you get $75,000 to write this cookbook, but then you end up spending maybe more money. And it takes like years and years. And So anyway, like we're already like busy. And so what this idea of like one recipe cookbook, like it can be produced like in a few months. We're like, yeah, let's do it. You know, like, and it was just sort of like a no brainer. And it was so it's a collaboration, but like really his idea of doing this one mini cookbook. And I, you know, at this point it's like, let's share the secrets. Let's share every single like detail to how to make it. You know, people, there's a Bon Appetit version of it. It's too, like, it's a lot shorter, but like if you, there's so many like little descriptors in there that you're going to miss out on by shortening that recipe. And it literally takes like us 3 to 4 months to train a sous chef to make it properly before we're like, okay, now you can actually do it without me watching you.
That's like the omelet at a sushi restaurant, like, or making the rice properly at a sushi restaurant.
It is. It's like such a big deal. It's like, you can taste it if it's like not right. You know, it's like, oh, that person was trying to be lazy about it and they added too much flour to make it go faster. So now it's more floury versus like light and pillowy. Oh. So the actual like, so, and then we've refined the process along the way, which you have to read the cookbook to know all the little details, but we've refined it along the way. So over the past 6 years. So, but yeah, I mean, now you know all the secrets, but then you still, even if you have the secrets, you still need practice. Like, and yeah, it's just making two bean bread. Imagine making 70 every day.
No.
Wow.
You are my bread tails. That is not
happening. I was going to say, Maggie, this is your opportunity for redemption.
To redeem myself. I'm not going to, oh my God, that's like, well, I ordered my book. I can't wait. And then I think, so you guys launched on Kickstarter. I think you set this fundraising goal of like $9,500.
Yeah.
You did it like what, times three or something you raised 30,000.
Yeah. It was just a way for us to like, and we talked about this, you know, it's like, oh, but Kickstarter seems like a, you know, we didn't want to seem like we're trying to raise money in the middle of all this thing, you know? That wasn't the motive behind it. We had already had this thing going. We're just trying to find a platform to pre-sell it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To know how many we are going to print, so we don't like overprint and stuck with a huge amount of books that we paid for. Because we had already committed to this thing and it was already in the works. So it was, so Kickstarter was just a way to like get the book fulfilled, to know who's, like an ordering platform that we didn't have.
And it made more sense when COVID happened. We're like, we definitely don't have any money to front this. So we're like, this is perfect. And, you know, just the timing of it, like some people, everyone has a different situation. Like my mom was like, well, at least you have more time with the kids. I was like, Mom, you have no idea my life is happening right now. You're in California. That's great. But like, for me, I'm working all day. But some people, this is an opportunity, you know, to like learn something new, you know, I don't know. So maybe
People have time.
Yes.
When is it going to be, is it already printed? Like, did you already, and is it like, when is it shipped out? Like, when are you sending it out?
So long story short, so actually, Maggie, you're getting a copy of the first run. Yes,
with the mirror in it, right?
He was reading it in his living room. He was like, oh, this feels so amazing. I have the first print. And then he realized that like three major paragraphs are left out.
Wow.
So
we're about a week behind. We had to reprint.
A whole like 1,000 run.
Oh my God.
I know, it sucks. Good thing news, we caught it. So that like, but the one that you have is the one that has the accidentally like, so we have a new one coming after.
Ryan was saying it will be like something that, you know, it'll be like trading cards. Like one day it'll be worth so much. Like, oh, they have like a one copy that's missing. And I'll be able to sell it for like $1 million on electronicbay.com. It's going to be an
Electronic Bay.
Oh, Amazon.
That's funny.
I think that's honestly, because it's like this, like the most important 2 to 3 paragraphs.
It's just like hurts my heart. It's, well, but did you find the process? How did you guys, I mean, can you take us into a little bit of like what it's like to self-publish? Just like a little bit of, and how you kind of worked with Kevin?
Yeah, like Kevin was a huge help. I mean, like in all honesty, this like this vision of the style of book was Kevin's vision. Mm-hmm. And he came to us and thought that the Being Bread would be the perfect like place to start with this sort of vision. Yeah. And we thought it was like right up our alley as well. Like it was, you know, this sounds like exactly like something we would do. It's like very indie. It seems like, you know, just doing such like an independent project like that, where, you know, you're not relying on, I mean, that's just like who we are. Like we're not relying on anyone else to like give us something or,
right.
Or our like cookbook advance or whatever. It started with like a very small budget and it was just, Kevin made it very easy. Mm-hmm. He sort of had the plans and where to get it. It was a collaborative effort, like sort of like how we're going to get like the illustrations done and what we wanted it to look like. I think like we found an illustrator through, it was the same illustrator that did our website illustration for Wherewithal. And then she ended up saying, was like, she started doing the book and she realized like, you know what, I'm probably not the best person for this, but I have a friend. So it was her friend that actually lives in Mexico. So it was sort of like, you know, having all these past connections.
That organically happened.
It organically sort of came together.
Right. Yeah, and he's already a natural like food writer. So, you know, and then he came and videotaped us like making it. And then he took it home and then he like sent the recipe like to several people, like Alpenussing, you know, like recipe tested it and got lots of feedback. My sous chef like did everything from scratch at home in his home oven. And so it's all recipe tested with a home oven, like not like in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's apparently like, yeah. So his wife made it and like sent a picture. It looked perfect. He said he took 3 times to make it perfect, but you know, again, it is, I think
I'm in trouble.
Ultimately, I hope that people realize that it's a work of love. Yeah. And
yeah.
You know, I hope that people are like feel really accomplished making it, but also they're like, well, now I know why they charge what they do.
And to that point though, like what is it that makes this bread so special?
Well, I mean, it's first like the ingredients. I think, you know, we're using like sourcing like the bacon. We get it from like Broadbent's bacon in Kentucky. So like we have to get that shipped to us once a week. Okay. You can't really buy that in a store. Maybe some stores, but not any that I know. And just like, I think
the little touches.
Yeah. And it's like, I think it's the amount of time like working with this, it's dough. It's like so difficult.
It's actually very sticky. It's not supposed to, if it looks like Wonder Bread, you've got it all wrong. It's kind of sticky, hard to work with. And then it takes a long time. Like it's like a cinnamon roll and then you roll it again and you pan fry it in the cast iron skillet. And then you let it rest and you reheat it and then brush it with bacon fat. And it's like all the Midwestern flavors of like potato, bacon, scallions, but lots of scallions. And the fact that we slice the scallions fresh every day,
like yeah,
slice it. It's like lots of scallions. And then the like sesame, and it just kind of like, it's like kind of a blend that like people can relate to, whether you're Asian or heritage or European heritage or wherever heritage. I feel like someone connects it to something that they know, like,
Yeah.
And it's not like anything that's, it comes from a traditional place. Like, you know, Bing is like a scallion pancake / bread. It depends on like the region, China, that like there's different variations. Some are thicker, some are thin. But like this one is actually just our, we took it to that place that it is now. It's like, it's half bread, it's half scallion pancake. It's just something that's like not out there in the world, except
for it's a very perfect expression of what Parachute is to Chicago. And I think what Wherewithal is kind of becoming, it feels like you guys, it's an expression of you guys.
Yeah. So is it possible to do, like if somebody was vegetarian or kept kosher, would the bread translate without the bacon?
I think so. Yeah. It's, I mean, like traditionally, like bean is made, it's just like just scallions. And that alone is delicious in
itself.
It's
delicious. So, it's very savory. It's delicious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can probably maybe add a little bit more salt then, just a touch, you know, cause you're losing that bacon. Yeah. We actually started, because of the to-go, we started doing vegetarian bean bread. So you can get vegetarian bean bread.
You have to cave.
Sorry that you asked.
Okay.
So like, you know, we were so, you know, I feel like this whole thing too with the to-go has really humbled us as chefs, because like before we're like, no, no to that, no to that, because you're just so like protecting your, you know, identity or whatever. But now it's just like you have to let go some of that. I really hope Michelin doesn't rate us on.
I hope they'd be a little bit more forgiving during this time.
Oh my God.
It's our guide to go. But, you know, it's just, it's just made us more like let go of some traditional things that we used to worry about and just like try to like, you know, feed people, you know, is our main goal. And so
it feels like this time has shrunk, like it's like having being internationally known, being a brand, it doesn't matter right now. It's so much about connecting to your community, being in touch with what they need and being able to provide it.
I feel like the consumers are the ones who are really going to dictate what's going to happen in the next year. Because I mean, I think like they're saying that most people just won't feel comfortable even going out to eat in a dining room.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. That's the part I'm dealing with where it's like, I have a real, I love going out to eat. I love going out to like bars, but like the genuine like terror of like going in somewhere and being like, okay. Cause the other thing that I think people haven't considered, or at least I haven't heard about people talking about it, is like, you got to take your mask off to eat.
That's why it is going to be like, I'm like, you know, we were a rush to like get something going because of cash flow, you know, but I'm not rushing back to reopen. I'm going to really think through it because there's so many different elements here that we are watching right now. I don't want to be like, I'm the first one to reopen my restaurant, you know. I'd be scared to do that right now.
Take it slow.
The transition to takeout was something that had to be rushed.
You had to do it.
Whatever you had at any moment, you just make it happen.
I mean, because we were sitting on inventory that was going to go bad.
But I think the transition back, I don't think there's any rush to get back. I think you
take
that extremely slow and be very cautious and careful.
Are you guys, like, when you think about, because you have to be talking about, I mean, I know you said you've sort of talked through every possible scenario, but just going through this, has it changed at all, just even how you think about the role of your restaurants or the role of yourselves, like, and as you're looking ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like more than ever before, we're more empathetic, I feel like, as people. And I think that, like, there's a huge population of people that need to be serviced right now. And we have this availability that we actually are still, you know, at least we're essential workers, we can provide a service. So we've been donating to Swedish Covenant, which was where I had my last two sons.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Wonderful that you guys are doing that too.
And actually one of our servers is now a CNA over there. And so she's actually gotten some of our food, which is really kind of cool. But like, I just remember seeing her posting how scared she was going to work and stuff. And so I also like, it's like being so human that like we have it bad as restaurants, but there's always going to be someone who has it worse, or maybe like, so it kind of human element, like we're all in this together. Everybody here is affected somehow, knows somebody who's affected somehow. And it feels kind of isolating and lonely. The only thing we can do to get out of this rut is to like do that one small thing of kindness, because I feel like we can always squeeze out one little small act of kindness, and that act of kindness kind of like helps promote that energy that like is getting us back to where we need to, like it just promotes like this kindness, you know, being kind is so important right now. I really think that because the stress of all of this and this like paranoia, like it does some, I don't know, some kind of like trauma response that we're having, like even John's saying he's got like day terrors, you know, like I'm going to work and I don't know why, but I just feel like different. Like my whole body physically just feels, it's all of this. And I just think right now it's like the humanity part is so important.
Yeah.
One of our local like producers, the owner of Francisco's, he passed away because of COVID. So right. it's then it became like so real. We're like, oh my gosh, like we're just like a couple degrees away from, or 1 degree away from Francisco's, you know? And
right. Well, so that like, so you were talking about your server who's working at the hospital and how she was terrified, but like you guys are also really on the front lines.
Yeah.
And like, and how are you protecting yourselves, both like physically yourselves and your staff who's still working, but like also how do you manage your emotions and keep your wellness side of things intact?
I don't know. I mean, we have weekly appointments with our therapists. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's hard to be, it feels weird to even be like, to talk and be joyous in this time. It's like, or even be happy about anything. It's, and I mean that in a different, like in like a certain way. I mean that like, it just, it's like, wow, should I even be?
You feel bad no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Laughing at anything right now? Like I'm just, it's just such a weird time. I feel like I definitely feel like there's some sort of PTSD thing. Like I do, I have these, I'll be going about my day and I just get these like flashbacks of like, of something in my past or something in like,
wow.
Or like
triggering.
Heard, and I'm just like, God, this is like, I just feel for every restaurant, like, worker and restaurant owner. It's like what we put ourselves through. And I think we just need to stop pretending that everything's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like even when we are okay, it's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, like we are, every restaurant owner I know is probably a month away from being out of business. And like at any good time, at any given time, and means that everyone in the restaurant is as vulnerable as that restaurant itself.
Right? I mean, even the people you think are doing well, like James Beard Award, like all these awards that you would think that like, oh, they're fine. Actually,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, but like Johnny, going back to what you were saying before, as far as like, not feeling like you can be happy or whatever. When I think that, you know, and it's different for me because I don't have 3 children and I don't have 2 businesses. You know, it's just me and my husband and, you know, thankfully, like, and I was working from home already. So I'm in a very different position than you guys and every other restaurant owner and small business owner out there. But I think that it's okay if you have a moment of happiness to celebrate that, because it's like, that's what's going to get you to move, get us all to continue moving forward.
You got to celebrate your wins no matter how big or small.
Yeah. And it's,
I think it's just, you know, it's something that I think you live with in this, like if you've worked in this industry, it's something you're like just ingrained in you to like, you're like, fuck, this is at any moment I could be on the street. You know, it's just like, you're not, I think. And then when you're in, put in this situation, it's just, it's like, what are we doing? Like, what, why are we doing
this for? Yeah.
What's this for? And like, I think if anything, this thing has given us some purpose. I think, you know, like we have like giving back to our community. I mean, we've always made that a priority, but we feel like in this time, it feels very needed.
Absolutely.
Giving some purpose back to ourselves helps us move forward, I think.
There's a lot of senior citizens, like for example, who need like donations or food.
Yeah.
So we just donated to Hanul Family Alliance. It's a Korean American, it's a Korean immigrant center, and these senior citizens like sometimes fall through the cracks because of English. They don't have access to, you know, online, and their families everywhere around the country. And so that felt really good to be able to like donate some food because of the donations from our patrons. So it's kind of a full circle. But you could see how much they appreciate that because they're so scared to go outside. But Yeah, I mean, I think John and I have started to think, like, what is the future of the restaurant industry? It's not going to look the same.
No,
not at all.
Not even close.
And help us, and God help us if we're all stuck with, you know, drive-through McDonald's and Chipotle.
And Amazon, baby, Chick-fil-A and Amazon. But, you know, I think, though, for me, the past few weeks in particular, accepting that it's not, like, there was a period where it was sort of like, I was mourning it. Like, I wrote a piece about all, it was sort of an elegy for the restaurants I can't review. And it was very cathartic because it was like, I think like what John touched on it is like, it's not just going to come back. Like, this is it for a while.
Everyone is in grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's grief.
And it's different levels. And you know, you can say it's over dramatic way to put it, but the truth is we're grieving. And to sort of take a moment and recognize that, and then also to go, okay, like, it's not the same though. Like, I can't just be wistful and it will come back, and, you know, or wishing for it to be so.
A perfect example of that is, you know, Fat Rice this week announcing that they were not coming back as Fat Rice, where you can come and dine and do whatever. It's like, they're going to be a bodega essentially. And it's you know, Mindy's doing the same, and it's kind of it's our new normal of
I think what's cool about that though is, again, like what you guys said before, is this notion of feeding the community is actually something that you're truly doing now.
It's what you know what to do. It's like this, like everybody who owns a restaurant, it's like you get into it because you love to cook and you love to feed people. And like, that's what I love, that it is survival mode, but in a way it's also a little bit of like, okay, well, let's do this. Let's dig in and figure out like, what can we do to keep doing what we love? And you guys are doing that. And it's like, and that's, again, coming back, like, that's something to celebrate.
You're scrappy.
Yeah. I don't know what, you know, I think like, what's the saying? It's chop wood, carry water. You know, it's like, just sort of keep doing what you know. That's sort of how we're taking it, is just do what we know. And that's the best we can do, because I don't know if I want to put definitions like of what we're going to do.
Right.
Like, we're not going to open, or we are going to open. I don't see that, like, I don't see the future at all. You know, it's just
strange.
Day to day. It's all day to day.
Well, and people like to push it there because it's like, it gives them hope, and they go, oh, so what do you see, you know, a year from now? Like, let's talk about what this is going to look like on the other side. And the truth is, like, nobody fucking knows.
Nobody knows.
I mean, it's like what Beverly said, like, the consumer is going to dictate what happens.
Right.
It's, if people want food to eat in the restaurant, then they're going to be asking for it. And that's when we will know when it's time to.
Right.
And if they're not comfortable, it doesn't matter what you are making, how incredible and delicious and glossy and lovely it looks.
Right.
If they're afraid to come and eat it,
then you can make all the big bread you want, but if there's no one sitting down to eat. Yeah. Well, I'm going to move us into short order, which is our almost last segment, where it's our quick fire round. Since there are two of you, you both get to answer the question. So we're just going to fire them at you, answer the first thing that comes into your mind. So first, what would both of you be doing if you weren't chefs and restaurant owners?
I've gained a lot of like carpentry knowledge, I guess, over like owning my own businesses.
I love it.
Probably that's my backup skill at this point. If this restaurant thing I'll probably be some sort of handyman.
Yeah. He's actually amazing. He's like, you should be a carpenter. I don't know. I guess it would be like maybe teaching. I enjoy teaching.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, I did teach at Kendall for a little bit. I'm like, this is kind of a nice thing, you know, like to do, but like my true calling is a restaurant, but I enjoy teaching. Yeah.
Next question is, who is your hero?
Hero.
If you have one.
If you have one.
I don't know if that's a question I can answer, because I feel like we all make this world go around in some way or another. I feel like anybody can be a hero to anyone at any given time. So
sure.
Like we all have, like, I feel like we're all inherently good, and I think that we can all be heroes at any time.
I love it.
Just like David Bowie said.
We could all be heroes.
For a day.
I don't know. I guess, you know what's so funny is, like, when you get older, you see your parents and you see their faults. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is why I'm
sorry. Yep.
Yeah, but I do see, like, I look up to my parents because they were immigrants, and, you know, my mom raised, like, 4 kids without any help, and I see the hard work that they brought up, and they instilled that in me, and it's part of me and who I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't not think that that's really awesome. So
that's great. I love it.
Okay, easier question. What did you have for breakfast today?
We had eggs, spinach.
Yeah, I just made whatever was in there.
Some sausage links.
It's so funny. It's like, we're like, to avoid going to the grocery store, we just bagged like bulk stuff from the restaurant. So it's like, usually it's just like eggs, and we had sausage, and
we don't cook like chefs at home most of the time. It's just like,
no chefs cook like chefs at home.
Feed this army of people.
It looks like,
right,
it is like an army. You know, like those, yeah, like compartmentalized plates from IKEA.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I line up we eat 6 up of them. Vegetables. And that's how we eat. We like don't even break out the nice china. We just bring the compartmentalized
plastic.
I
love it.
Yep. Yeah. The Target plates. And then it just feels like, cause like,
we're like a damn mess hall. I love it.
Yeah. It's like a mess hall. Yes. It's an army.
Just like ladle that gruel, ladle the gruel, move, eat.
Move.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What movie will you always watch if you stumble on it while flipping through channels?
Young Frankenstein.
Ah, that's one of my favorites. That's a great one. It's so good. Can you quote, like, are you the kind of, because I do this.
Yes,
like,
yes.
As you watch the movie, do you say the lines before they're going to happen?
I probably know it all front to back.
Oh, it's so good. It's one of my all-time favorite movies, too. Great one.
Definitely, please don't say yours is Young Frankenstein.
I know. What is my
name? Oh. What's my movie that I love? I don't know. I guess
probably some 80s, like, John Hughes or something.
John Hughes. Maybe Sixteen Candles.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Love it.
Yeah.
Here's another one that might be a little harder, but again, if you have one, what is your life motto?
Life motto.
Boy, I think if I were just to think about today, it's just like, just got to keep going till tomorrow. I don't know. I think that's sort of how, like, we're looking at it right now. I guess it's hard for me to look back because I feel like our life, it as like restaurant industry people, our life motto changes like so rapidly and quickly. And like for 5 years, we're living this way and we're like, yeah, this is my goal for life, or this is the way I live my life. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, that's no longer the way we live. And it's sort of, yeah, today it's just like, let's just get to tomorrow because tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chance.
Yeah,
to-
I guess it is, like, I don't know. I remember Chef Jackie had this, like, downstairs, like, in the prep room. It was like, today, the reason why they called it the present is because it's a gift, right? So,
yeah.
I guess my life motto is you can only take with you to, like, what you've given.
Mm. Okay.
And I try to remember that because I think we're in a hustle to like make money and accumulate and like be wealthy and like,
yeah. If I can get here, I'll be okay. And then you get there. Okay. Now if I can get here, now here.
Yeah. So part of me just tries to remember that, like, look, you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
Right.
So the legacy you leave is what you like have given.
Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful. I love that.
How people remember you is like how, you know, you, sort of can live forever, you know? So people forget you, you know, for the things that you did or didn't do, then it's sort of, yeah, it's like, what do we live for? You know, I think we have to get people to remember us for what we do.
Right. And now here's hopefully another easy one. What song will make you stop whatever you're doing and dance, or at least shake your head?
I'm a Madonna fan. I'm a huge
fan. Yeah.
Like anything Madonna, I could do the strike a pose, like moves.
A little Vogue, a little Holiday.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm Holiday. I don't know if I have one. I it's just, I think mine's in the moment, you know, it's like
his taste is
I go from like A to Z all the time on the music choices. It's all over the place.
Well, what were you listening to today that was like really?
I don't know if I listened to music
or yesterday. The most recent thing that you were like, yes, more. I will listen to this 3 times in a row.
I don't know. You know, honestly, like I was listening to John Prine.
Oh.
I first heard that he like got sick from COVID. And I was just sort of like, it's like this guy, he, you know, and I'm not like a country music fan. I am a fan of all music, you know, and I just like the guy survived like 2 bouts of cancer. He had like his half of his like neck removed and from surgery. And this is what like, you know, got him or like what did him in. And I just felt like he's sort of, you know, just sort of like an inspiring person to listen to. So like, mm-hmm. I think it, at any time, like something can make me think about the music that I'm listening to. I hadn't listened to him in probably years. And I heard that he was sick and I was like, I need to listen to him again. Cause he's like a Bob Dylan, you know, or like.
That's a great song, right? The lyrics, the everything. Yeah. He's just amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Last request meal. No limitations.
No limitations?
Yes. Yeah. Last request meal, no limitations.
Again, like food is, it's like, I'm.
And Johnny, remember, this is a quick fire. This is called short order for a reason.
Not a slow burn.
Something that makes my soul feel good. Something.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't know.
Okay.
Anything that's healthy and delicious. Yeah.
Mine would be kimchi jjigae.
Oh, yeah.
Something comforting, something that reminds me.
Tell us what that is, please.
Huh?
Tell us what that is, please.
Yes.
I love it. Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. So, you mean, I'm sorry. I missed what you
said. Kimchi jjigae.
Oh, kimchi jjigae.
Yeah.
What is it? Okay, so you always, like, the thing about kimchi, you never waste it. It's not like the thing that you just throw away. Like, even if it's like overripe and you wouldn't want to eat it on your table, you could always cook it, like sweat it with some little bit more garlic and ginger, throw some bacon if you want in there, throw some thick chunks of tofu. And it's like, I don't know, something super comforting about it. And I think like last meal on earth, I just want comfort and like a big hug.
You want a drive-by beef hug.
Drive by kimchi hug. That's funny.
It just, yeah, no,
I, a kimchi hug.
I know what it is.
Love it. Okay, this one should be
Maggie.
What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Yes.
There you go.
That was your quickest fire yet.
Could be any other way. I just gotta.
No. Oh yeah. Perfect.
He had that one ready to go. He was like, yeah. Yeah.
And Beverly? And I wish everybody listening could actually see the visuals that they both did.
It was perfect.
It was
perfect.
So good.
I like freak him out because like I'll be like going about my day and all of a sudden I'm like, shit. And he's like, oh, what just happened? I'm like, oh, sorry. I was just talking to myself.
Like, fuck needs to be drawn out, but shit is, like, really fast. Shit! Fuck. That's funny. I love it.
So normally our last segment usually is Sip This, where we, when we are together, we taste something that we bring in. It could be a wine, a beer, a spirit, whatever. But since we're not together, I want to give a shout out to a local grassroots organization that was started by Julia Mamose, who is a partner at Kumiko and Kiko and a phenomenal bartender as well. She founded the group called Cocktails for Hope. It's to raise awareness and push local leaders to allow bars the sale of to-go cocktails in Chicago. And, you know, right now bars are able to, if they have certain licenses, they're able to sell full unopened bottles of liquor and cocktail kits. But Julia is saying that to help bars survive, their margins would be much greater if they can actually create the cocktails and then sell them to go. So I want to give a shout out to that. And that being said, there are a number of bars and restaurants that are doing cocktail kits around the city and the suburbs. So if you are thirsty, which we all are, because liquor sales are way up all over the country, since we're all stuck at home drinking, patronize some of your favorite local places and buy their cocktail kits. Especially if you don't have a lot of booze at home or you're not very handy with your cocktail skills. This can kind of help you not only get a great cocktail, but learn how to put something together. So that's, I just want to give that little shout out to the local booze folks.
Isn't it like in New York and LA, it's possible to do that?
Yeah. And there's a number of cities around the country that you can do that. In Chicago being stagnant in its liquor laws, and it's Illinois. I don't know if it's a federal or a city thing, or it's not state. Sorry, federal. Yeah. I think it's state.
It's a state.
And it's just moving very slowly at a point when things need to move a little bit faster to help small businesses survive.
Does Cocktails for Hope have a petition, or are there ways that people can do that?
Yeah. If you Google Cocktails for Hope, hold on. Actually, cocktailsforhope.org. You could go there.
I like how you're telling people to Google it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I didn't know.
Google it, motherfuckers.
Yeah. So if you go to cocktailsforhope.org, it outlines everything there. There's a survey, there's a mission statement, FAQs, and tells you how you could share this with your people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Beverly and Johnny, you guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you for keeping grounded and doing what you know best to do.
And thank you for being honest.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you for telling the truth and really speaking to it. Thank you.
I think it helps people to hear what is really going on, and it helps people process, because everybody, like we said, is grieving in some way or another during this. And
very therapeutic, honestly, just to talk about it, because honestly, there's nobody to talk to sometimes. It's like, everyone's going through the same thing, and that's in our same boat, and you know, nobody else really knows what's going on. And
exactly.
So it's nice to just have a place to do that. So thank you.
Totally.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, our pleasure. Thank you guys for joining us. And thank you for everybody who has tuned in during this weird ass time.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully sooner than later, we will all be in the same room together instead of Zooming, but at least we're together in this format.
Yeah.
So until next time, guys, love you all.
Love you all.
Thank you for tuning in.